You're listening to Food Integrity Now with Carol Gravey and Matt Spate. Hello and welcome to Food Integrity Now. I'm Carol Gravey, your host today. At Food Integrity Now, our goal is to educate those who want to learn about food. For those who want to learn about the quality of their food, and for those who want to know the truth about their food. Our show today is brought to you by Hole in the Wall Urban Vitamin Shop. Mark and Nancy Duvall, the owners, are two of the most knowledgeable people I know about supplements and herbs and vitamins and much, much more. Check out their website at www.holeinthewallherbshop.com, and shop is spelled SHOPPE. Once again, that's holeinthewallherbshop.com. Our guest today is Tom Muller. Tom is the author of Extra Virginity, The Sublime and Scandalous World of Olive Oil. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Carol. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. I first want to tell you that I loved your book, and I really learned a lot about olive oil. It's just something I never really thought about. I just took it for granted that if I was buying extra virgin olive oil, that's what I was getting. But as we're going to find out during this next hour or so, that may not be the case. So, Tom, let's start out with what started your passion for olive oil? What events transpired that made you want to write this book and really learn about olive oil?
Well, Carol, I actually started off almost by accident. Like many great things in life, I kind of stumbled into it. I had been living in Italy for the better part of 10 years and was talking with one of my editors at The New Yorker about what the next project would be. And the topic of olive oil came up, and it seemed like a kind of an easy, tasty, enjoyable assignment. And so I embarked on it. But very soon I realized that I'd bitten off, if not more than I could chew, at least a mouthful. It's an incredibly deep subject, both in terms of, you know, truth in labeling and crime and punishment, but also in terms of cultural and historical depth. I mean, the things that the Greeks and the Romans didn't get up to with olive oil, and also nutritionally, the way in which modern medical science is gradually beginning to understand what people have known around the Mediterranean for thousands of years, that olive oil is really the kind of the keystone to the Mediterranean diet. So I gradually, in the process of writing that article, which turned out to be a feature in The New Yorker in 2007 called Slippery Business, I became aware of all these things. And then for the subsequent 4 years plus, off and on, I went in depth into the various topics of olive oil, which produced the book.
Right. Well, where did you even start with this when given this assignment? Where did you go first?
Well, I started by talking with the head of Flavio Zaramella, a gentleman who was at that time the head of one of the major olive oil associations. And he was holding a tasting, and I thought, well, that would be a great way to start, an olive oil tasting, how cute, you know, how sort of quaint. And it was very interesting and very kind of quirky. As soon as they finished the tasting, he started filling my ear with all the things that were wrong with the olive oil world and how so many things are sold under the extra virgin label that simply are not extra virgin, that honest growers are having a real hard time. In fact, honest growers are going out of business around the Mediterranean, in California, in Australia, and elsewhere. And that really became the focal point of my research, is talking with people. Because it's such a skewed market, because it's so untransparent and so hard to make an honest living in olive oil, all of the sort of wishy-washy people who aren't 100% committed to it, have long since left. And it's really the true believers of olive oil, the people who really need to do it and can't do anything else, that are still in the business. And that makes a wonderful cast of characters for a writer.
Oh, yeah. And I loved, in reading your book, I loved the stories that you went into about all the different characters. And it was just really not only educational for me, but it was an enjoyable read.
a lot of people ask me why on earth put so much biography in there, and my answer is simple, that each of those oils that I looked at was connected in clear ways to the personality of the people who made it, and vice versa. So that's kind of why it's as much about, or even more about, the people than about the substance.
Yeah, and I agree. When you would go into the stories about how the people, various cast of characters, got started in olive oil, it was just interesting to see how it all transpired and how it led them, several of them, on several different continents to really explore, the world of olive oil. And so let's talk a little bit about industrial olive oil. I had never even heard that term, thought about it. You know, I'm one of these people that I'm really careful about the food I eat. I eat pretty clean. And when I heard about your book and heard about the claims that you make in your book, I was like, really? Oh, I just thought I could just, if I went out and bought an expensive olive oil, I was good to go. So let's just give a little bit of history about, olive oil and how it's becoming industrialized.
Right. Well, first of all, your initial instinct is correct. You shouldn't have to have a lot of knowledge to go out to a store and buy a good product, whether it's olive oil or any other product. I mean, you shouldn't have to have a PhD in olive oil to be able to get the good stuff. So there's something wrong with the picture on the macro scale. And it's not just about olive oil that we're talking here. Industrial olive oil. We start off with the fact that olive oil, olives are fruit, like they're stone fruit or drupes, like cherries and plums. And therefore, olive oil, properly made extra virgin olive oil, is fresh squeezed fruit juice. So that's an anomaly in vegetable oils or vegetable fats and oils, because almost everything else, everything that's sold on the retail level, that apart from olive oil, is from seeds and nuts, not from fruits. And everything else, except for extra virgin olive oil, is refined. In other words, sent to a refinery where it goes through a series of chemical and heat treatments that essentially remove all the unpleasant stuff, along with a lot of the nutritional benefits. And what you have is a pretty flat, pretty standard liquid fat. There's nothing necessarily wrong with that, but there's not a whole lot right with it either. Extra virgin olive oil, being fresh squeezed fruit juice, is immensely, vastly better than the other vegetable oils next to which it's sold in the supermarkets. And one of the things I'm constantly amazed by is walking into a big supermarket and seeing the battery of oils: sunflower and canola and soybean and peanut and olive oil. Oop. I mean, it's a completely different thing. It's like selling fresh squeezed fruit juice next to the industrial oils. Anyway, to come back to olive oil, what isn't good enough to be extra virgin, in other words, untreated, fresh squeezed, is refined. In one way or another, it's subject to chemical and heat treatments that remove the bad smells and bad tastes. It becomes a lot closer in chemical makeup, in culinary appeal, and in nutritional value to its brethren, the seed and nut oils. It becomes an industrial oil. It becomes a refined oil. It's better for you, by and large, than any other vegetable oil, but not a lot better, as is extra virgin olive oil. So the essential thing to keep in mind is that extra virgin olive oil is or ought to be fresh squeezed fruit juice. And a lot of what's sold out there is a mixture of fresh squeezed fruit juice and refined oil, or frankly, some other vegetable product.
And so the industrial version, it could be, they not only do this great refining of it and chemical process, but they, in essence, might be mixing it with cottonseed oil or canola oil or other various seed oils. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, there are outfits that do that, and I've identified some in my book. There are other outfits that very large brand names that are known around the States that simply use very low grade olive oil, and they use a treatment called deodorization, which is essentially a very soft, bland refining process, low temperature and very quick, which does essentially knock off the nasty smells and nasty tastes of very low-grade olive oil, and produces something that's flat, nondescript, but essentially not repugnant. And then they goose it with a little bit of real extroversion to give it some character, because otherwise it really has nothing, and sell it as extra virgin. Now, once upon a time, I used to think, well, they're a step or two above the soybean oil salespeople, you know, who color and flavor soybean oil and sell it as olive oil. I no longer actually think that. I think that they are as bad as the ones who sell another product as olive oil, as extra virgin olive oil, simply because of what they do. Not only to consumers, I mean, they're defrauding consumers. They're telling them they're getting fresh fruit juice, and when in fact they're getting something that's had been refined and doctored. But also what they're doing to honest producers who simply cannot compete with the prices, the ridiculously low prices that are currently commanded by these Frankenstein oils, I'll call
right.
them.
Right. And a red flag was just raised when you said something about the soybean oils being passed off and colored as extra virgin olive oil. You know, I know that 90%+ of soybeans are genetically modified. So there's, you know, you in essence may be eating an olive oil that is made of soybeans, and you may be getting a genetically modified product.
Very possible. And if you had an allergy to soybean oil or peanut oil or something, most of the time, refining processes that these oils would undergo would remove the proteins that would cut off an allergy. But, you know, if you're dealing with fraudsters, how much quality control can you expect? Are you expect them to properly refined peanut oil? I don't know. So, you know, there are a lot of kind of unanswered questions when the FDA tells me, and I can sympathize with them, I really can. They say, look, we can't begin to touch olive oil. We have so few resources, which have been reduced over time, and such a large and growing body of work that we need to do on stuff that's killing people actively. We can't begin to touch olive oil. But when they say that it really isn't a threat to public health, I wonder how true that is.
Yeah, I wonder about that too. And another thing that I wonder about is when we're talking about the FDA, you know, there's so much lobbying done with big corporations to, you know, defend their products, even if they're, you know, substandard. I wonder if this happens in the olive oil industry with some of the big industrial olive oil makers.
Absolutely. And in fact, right now, we're seeing quite a bit of lobbying. The Olive Oil Makers of America, mostly in California, but also in Texas, Georgia, Arizona, and elsewhere, are trying to take the situation into their own hands, at least to defend themselves against false advertising and unfair competition. And they are trying to pass what's called a federal marketing order, which essentially is blessed by the federal government, but a way of setting an agricultural industry. It's happened in almonds. It's happened in tree crops of various kinds. It's happened in a number of things, a number of products, particularly in California. Industry says, right, okay, the FDA or other health bodies are not able to do the policing on this. We will, with their blessing, do the policing ourselves. We'll set our own standard. We'll take a look at the ourselves. And it's worked very, very well. It's actually produced clarity, transparency, and better standards in a number of different products. That's going on with olive oil. And lo and behold, a number of major companies are lobbying against this sort of clarity and transparency. In fact, they're getting politicians on a short lead presumably they have a relationship with to speak up, even when they don't know what they're talking about. Charles Schumer recently spoke up and wrote a letter to the USDA against the marketing order, saying it was a threat to jobs and it was going to raise the price of olive oil in America, a series of complete nonsense statements that he was clearly doing on the behest of big oil.
Right. Well, it sounds to me kind of like the labeling issue that, you know, Monsanto and the other large biotech companies are doing against labeling, that it's going to cost the consumer more money. And, you know, there's just money talks.
Well, how much money are you spending at the end of the decade in medical bills because of what you've just been ingesting cheap over the last 10 years? That long-term expense is something that people don't even talk
about. I know,
about.
And that's one of my pet peeves when people say they don't want to buy organic, or, you know, they don't really choose their food that carefully because it's cheaper. And, you know, it's when you think of the long-term effects, you know, it's like, have we become that short-sighted, you know, that it doesn't matter, but
it's amazing. And so, you know, it's in olive oil, it's an interesting situation where you have sort of a fair trade issue in the first world, because I mean, where I live here in Italy, 50% of the olive trees, more or less, are abandoned. No one can afford to make a living off of them anymore because the market price is so low. It's artificially low because it's been depressed by a standard that's been stretched out of all honesty. Extra virgin no longer means anything. So people who try to really make extra virgin olive oil out of their own trees, you know, their costs are twice or three times what the market price of olive oil is, and they can't begin to make a living. So when you buy cheap stuff, whether it's olive oil or anything else, you're not only shortchanging your liver and the rest of your organism, but you're also ripping off someone who's trying to do the right thing out in the field.
Right. And so let's talk about that. What do you think the answer is to this problem? I mean, you know, so here we have really high integrity olive oil producers that are creating high quality extra virgin olive oil, and yet they can't make money doing it. What's the solution?
Well, I think, first of all, I do think that top down enforcement can be helpful only to a certain extent. One or two good busts, one or two good investigations would really help send a message to the market saying this sort of behavior is no longer acceptable. Mm-hmm. But really what's going to make the difference is consumer awareness, and as it has in wine and artisanal cheeses and sea salt and coffee and microbrew beer and you name it, a number of premium products where the consumer has begun to climb the learning curve of what they like, what's good, all the complexities. I mean, if you think about olive oil, many people ask me, so what, you know a lot about olive oil, what's your favorite olive oil? And I say, that's a good question. What's your favorite wine? And of course, there's a long pause because no one has you may have a favorite wine, but it really sort of depends.
Right. I mean, what you're eating, where you're at. Yeah. All of the above.
Are you having a picnic outdoors? Are you having a serious dinner in a big French restaurant? Or, there are thousands of wines. The fact is there are 700 different kinds of olives and thousands of different kinds of olive oils, different styles, big aggressive, pungent, bitter ones and very mild, delicate, almost buttery ones. There are olive oils that have a faint banana aftertaste and that smell of fresh cut grass and of tomato leaves, and it's a whole different world, and it's only just beginning to be discovered. The good news is that it really is, despite the difficulties in the market, and in some cases because of the opacity of the market in the average supermarket, the word is getting out that there are hundreds, if not thousands, of different kinds of olive oils, and that it's a whole different world of flavors and of nutrition. So I think that ultimately the real tipping point is going to be reached when the average North American consumer, 330 million people, can say, you know, I kind of like that early harvest Kuranaki oil that I had last week. I'm gonna buy that more, and which means that more money, they'll be willing to spend a little bit more money or a lot more money to get that kind of oil. And that will trickle down to the producers who are making it, the early harvest Kuranaki, whether that be in Australia or in Greece where it originated. And, it's a win-win situation, because even the big companies right now, because of the paper-thin margins that exist olive oil has been commoditized. Even extra virgin olive oil has been driven down from a quality product, a premium product, to this commodity. No one's making any money, not even the big companies, not even the industrial oil companies. And they would benefit too if people started differentiating and appreciating quality. So if what happens in America with olive oil follows the trend that happened in wine and various other products, I think there's a real chance that North America could be the driver of a sea change in extra virgin olive oil.
Wow, that's exciting. And when you were describing some of those oils with hints of banana and such, I love all that. And I think you're right. I think that is the key, where people, you know, need to get excited about it and learn more about it and just be educated, and which is what your book, I think, does an excellent job of doing. So let's talk about how to really find a good olive oil. What are some suggestions that you may have for our listeners? You know, so they don't want to go out and get a PhD in olive oil, but just, you know, how do you go out and find, or how do you know?
Absolutely. And it's a $1 million question, because in a market where there is no truth in labeling, or very little, and no enforcement, it's tough to know what you get until you crack open the bottle and take a taste. And even then, if you don't know anything, you're likely to like what you've always liked. I mean, I grew up with very, very, very low grade olive oil that had been sitting in my parents' and my grandparents' pantry for many years. The notion that it'd be a fresh squeezed fruit juice that should be consumed within the harvest year was completely foreign to me. So it wasn't until I moved to a place where that was sort of thing was available that I realized. To answer your question, I think the number one thing that you could do is to find a place where they sell olive oil in such a way that you can taste it before you buy it. And I have a website called truthinoliveoil.com, which actually identifies, it's a growing list, thank goodness, because but there are already something on the order of 500 different locations in North America where you can walk in, and there are a range of different high quality olive oils that you can choose from and taste before you buy, and often get some education from the store owner about what to expect. The bitterness and pungency, for example, are not flaws but actually strengths, and indicate a considerable, I mean, they track the health benefits of an oil. The more bitter and pungent it is, the chances are the healthier it is, and indicate its freshness. That's an example. So if you can buy from a place where you can taste first. If you can't do that, the next best thing is certain ground rules for choosing a bottle. One is, see if you can get one that indicates when it was made, in other words, harvest date, or at least best buy date, and where exactly on the globe it was made, and who made it. Those are three questions which, strangely enough, as strange as it may seem, are very difficult to have answers to in the average label. So if you find one that has one or more of those, you're in good shape. You're likely to be in good shape, more likely to be in good shape. Then if you have an olive oil that mentions the cultivar, what kind of olive of those 700 possible different kinds of olives, that's another sign of seriousness on the part of the producer. Obviously get a bottle that's dark glass or a tin, because light glass allows light through. The three major enemies of olive oil, fresh olive oil, are light, heat, and oxygen.
What about plastic?
I don't recommend plastic, because they're all different grades of plastic. And there again, you need to know olive oil is a solvent. And, you know, there are a lot of plastic 3-liter and 5-liter jugs that are being sold. I just wouldn't recommend people using plastic.
Okay, Kirkland brand, organic olive oil. It comes in that big plastic. I bought it. But is that extra virgin olive oil?
The Kirkland Tuscan blend that I have had from Costco is, and it's actually pretty good for a supermarket oil. It doesn't measure up to the really Grand Cru stuff, but it's perfectly good. I've also had other things at Costco. Corto Olive, which I also write about in my book, has sold things through Costco. So they do sell good oil, but they also sell some pretty unspeakable stuff in larger quantities that simply isn't extra virgin at all.
Okay, so then you have the labeling, the tasting. What else?
If you can find something that mentions ideally you have something that really does mention when these olives were crushed and the oil was taken out of them. That's a harvest date, because remember, this is fresh squeezed fruit juice, so you really need to know when that fruit was crushed. Bottle by dates are not the same thing, because they are determined, they're set by when the oil goes into the bottle, and that oil might have been sitting in a big tank out back for 1 or 2 years before it went into the bottle. So that's not as much help, but it's still better than nothing. Other indications are the DOP or it's like Appellation Contrôlée for wine. That indicates it's a European Union designation that adds another layer of controls on the quality. California Olive Council seal is another thing to look for. But it's unfortunately, when you go into a mass market store, it's more the choice of the store than what they're selling, or the choice of the specific brand. And there again, I'd recommend people have a look at my ever-growing list on truthinoliveoil.com, where I do try to keep up with at least my own experiences and experiences of the few people in the world that I trust on olive
oil. And, you know, our olive oil consumption, according to your book, is ever increasing in the U.S. Is that not correct? I mean, is Greece still number one for olive oil consumption per capita? Or
per capita, Greece is absolutely number one. But in terms of total national production consumption, we passed them, because although we don't eat nearly as many liters per year as the Greeks, we're a lot more
of us.
Total, we've just passed Greece. We've just edged past Greece, and we're approaching Italy in terms of overall national consumption. And, you know, this growth is something on the order of 10% per year. So the amount of olive oil being used in America is huge. And again, it's an exciting market from the point of view of really turning the tide a bit, because if the American market wises up and really begins to appreciate quality, then that's really good news for growers around the world, not just in California or Texas or Georgia, but more broadly in all the places around the world, and particularly the Mediterranean, where quality oil is made.
Well, I have a friend who lives in Northern California, and I told her I would ask you this question. She and her husband, they currently have about 50 trees, and this is just for their own personal consumption, and they give away a lot of olives, you know, as gifts and stuff. And they're thinking about bottling or pressing it through Il Fornaio. And she had a question, and I don't know if you can answer this or not, but about olive fruit flies. Do you know anything about that?
Yes, and it's a big problem pest, which at a certain point early on, California State Agricultural Commission had a chance to really nip in the bud. That chance was not taken, and the olive fly has spread in California. So that is a problem. But there are a range of tactics to head off the olive fly. I would recommend she get in touch with a gentleman named Paul Vossen, who is at the UC Davis Extension and is a farm advisor and knows the latest and greatest techniques in how to combat the olive fly and other pests and diseases of olive trees.
Oh, cool. Well, thank you for answering that. I told her I would do that for her. Another thing that you talk about in your book are just some of the ancient uses of olive oils and some of its medicinal properties and stuff. Do you want to speak anything about that?
Yeah. One of the things that really surprised me was how olive oil in the ancient world, you know, back as far back as 4000 BC, but certainly among the ancient Greeks and Romans, was not only a signature food and a critical part of the daily diet, but also a fuel for furnaces and lamps and heating. It was used as a softener for fabrics and a lubricant for machines, a skin lotion and a cleanser. I mean, dinner party wasn't a dinner party without without olive oil. And the baths and the gymnasia, those two sort of central center points and hubs of classical civilization, functioned on olive oil. Not only were they lit by and heated by olive oil, but bathers and athletes of every stripe wouldn't have thought of doing their thing without ample supplies of olive oil to spread over their bodies before and after the activity. And in fact, when the supplies of olive oil were cut off during barbarian invasions in the late empire, they didn't just find a substitute. They didn't start smearing themselves with butter or something. They simply discontinued athletics and bathing, and they closed down the baths and closed down the gymnasia because it was unthinkable to do these things without scented olive oil. So olive oil for them was really kind of an indicator of a civilized life, and those people in the world who didn't use olive oil, i.e. those barbarians in the north who used butter or other vegetable oils and drank beer instead of wine were the definition of barbarian because they didn't know the joys of olive oil.
Wow. And so what do you think happened with that culturally? Why did that not get passed down to us for the most part? I mean, I was unaware of all of this.
Well, interestingly, it does exist still in a number of Mediterranean countries. I was speaking with a Palestinian woman who, when she was 5 years old, was unhealthy. At least her parents thought she was unhealthy and terribly skinny. And so her mother would wake her up every morning, early in the morning, and smear her with olive oil because that was a sort of a way of I don't know, strengthening her system. It seemed to work. She seems pretty healthy now. And I know several people I've met in southern Italy and in Greece who start off the day with a jigger of olive oil or have a spoonful of olive oil at the hearth in the winter as a kind of a medicinal as well as a health food. And, you know, of course, still to this day in the Christian faith, Orthodox and Catholic, olive oil is the base of holy oils and is a central part of religious ritual.
Oh, that's right. They use it in Catholicism, which is how I was raised. The anointing of the sick or the I should know this. I had catechism. Is it extreme unction? Is that it?
Olive oil, presumably. Yeah. But yeah. You get some, and when you're confirmed, you get a bit more, a little cross of olive oil, and I mean olive oil with other things in it, following recipes that are suggested in the Bible and perfected by the papacy. But olive oil is sort of the prime active ingredient in holy oils, and it's something that if you get a Catholic or Orthodox priest talking about, it's a fascinating set of parables for, you know, one Catholic Monsignor at a monastery south of Siena told me that he thought olive oil was the oil because it sinks in and steeps whatever it touches and leaves a stain that can never be washed away. So as a holy oil, once you are anointed, you are converted, and that's never going to be washed away. I thought that was kind of an interesting observation.
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting analogy there. I'm not sure that I will agree with that one, but it's interesting.
Right.
So what's next in the olive oil world? Where do you see this going?
Well, I'm trying to pick up where the book left off. I mean, my book raises more questions than it answers by a good bit. And a number of people have said, well, that's great. Thanks a lot for putting me olive oil. Where, as you asked me earlier, where do I get the good stuff? How do I know what's good? How do I connect with people who care about olive oil? How do I know who the producers are and so on? And how do we get some transparency in labeling? And when you introduced the show with the aim to educate about quality food and know the truth about food, I've started a what I'm calling a grassroots movement called Truth in Olive Oil, which aims to draw aside the veil on olive oil, explain to people what great oil is and what its kind of sinister alter ego is and why it is that they should know the difference and demand the difference, not only for themselves and for their families, but also for the producers who are the honest producers who are being squeezed. My website, truthinoliveoil.com, kind of lays out a plan at this point. It's in early stages, but I hope it takes off for citizens oil activism with a manifesto that I'm going to be publishing in the next couple of weeks. And I'm working on a film with a couple of really good filmmakers called Fresh Squeezed, which tries to capture this movement and stresses the fact that olive oil is a wonderful food and I care about it and so on, but it's only the tip of the iceberg. It's only part of a larger question of transparency and truth in labeling in our food supply, which we're consumers, 330-odd million of us in North America, are caught somewhere between companies large and small who aren't always to be relied upon to tell the truth, although many of them do, and I want to stress that. I'm not against big companies. Some of the best oil I've had is made by big companies. But and the government, which for various reasons isn't willing or able to enforce even the limited rules that are laid down. And we're in the middle. And as I heard one poor meat packer say, who had been put out of business by cheap imports, last time I read the American Constitution, it starts off with "we the people." Now, what happened to "we the people"? And I think that's a very good question that one needs to look after the majority. And if I can just give people a forum for sharing ideas about olive oil and understanding what good olive oil is and starting to demand it, push that agenda forward a little bit, maybe a grassroots movement will get us where the government oversight has not been able to get
right.
us.
Right, and it always starts with a small group of people, and it just can grow and grow. You know, one thing that you said earlier about the FDA saying they don't have the time or resources to regulate olive oil, the dichotomy to that is that they do have the time and resource to go out and harass the raw dairy and raw milk people about their products, which I think is just ludicrous. So that's a whole nother topic. But I think that, again, as we know, the FDA is not a perfect organization, and there's much lobbying going on and with the big corporations. And I agree, they're not all there are a few with integrity, and I want to stress that too, but there are many that have no integrity. So I think it's up to us as consumers to just take it into our own hands and really know what's in our food and do our research and, care, because everybody eats. I mean, it's something we all have in common, and the food that we eat and the things that we drink, it all affects, the quality of our life and our health. So why would we not care?
Right. And it's also a lot of fun.
Yeah,
I mean, at the end of the day,
sure,
you start to enhance your, it's like learning more about music or more about art. It enriches your life as well as enriching your organism and that of your family. So it's something that really does repay as much attention as we can give it. And again, it connects you with the people who are making this stuff, the honest people who are making this stuff, which is a fascinating set, as I've found out as a writer, but also as an eater. Fascinating universe of great people who are really doing the right thing and really sacrificing a lot and working hard to make something that is a cut above or several cuts above, and often not rewarded for that. And in fact, going out of business.
Right, right. And, I will also say that in doing research about your food, it can really be a lot of fun. I mean, I have the privilege of getting to read, books like yours and just being thrilled about them because I'm learning so much about something I've never really even thought about. And I think our listeners will agree when they start to just really take responsibility for learning and discovering what's in our food, it can be really exciting.
It really can be. It really can be. And it's and health and travel and high cuisine all rolled into
one. So I have a new thing on my list now. I'm going to, every city I go to, I'm going to have to find an olive oil tasting room, much like I would to find a wine tasting room in certain cities. So I'm pretty excited about that. And I've already found one in Colorado Springs, I think I shared with you, which was the Venice Olive Oil Company. So it was pretty cool to go in there and taste all these different olive oils.
Great. That's a real awakening.
Right, it is. So thank you, Tom, for being a guest on our show today and giving us such great information about olive oil. I know it has changed the way I will buy olive oil, and I hope our listeners will do their research. And as we say on the show, don't believe us. Do your own research. That way you have the responsibility for yourself. And thank you once again, everyone, for listening out there. If you like what you hear on the show, please remember to head on over to iTunes and leave us a comment or rating. It's really the best way that we can get the word out about food and how important it is. And if you have any show ideas, comments, or just want to say hi, you can email us at info@foodintegritynow.org. We'd really love to hear from you. This is Carol Gervais wishing you a happy and healthy week. And until next time, stay educated and stay active. Thanks for listening.